Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the 1977 Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition Monster Manual. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in it. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are concluding our journey through the W section of the Monster Manual. That's right, just three more episodes to go in this season, after this one, that is. Today, we're going to talk about the Wolverine, the White, and the Wyvern, so let's get started. First up, we have the Wolverine. Wolverines are great. I said in the section on the Weasel, Giant that Mustelids are a lot of fun. They might not be the timeless classic the wolves are, but that's actually one of their advantages. You know, there's something a little bit different. Wolverines are pretty fascinating animals, actually. They have this reputation for ferocity and aggression despite their relatively small size. They're kind of the size of a medium-sized dog, but they're built more like a bear, kind of squat and stocky, so they look very threatening. Wolverines are mainly scavengers in the wild, and they have this reputation for being very hungry. In fact, their species name, Gulo Gulo, just means glutton. And this is to do with food shortages, especially in winter climates, right? They eat a lot because they don't necessarily know where their next meal is coming from. But it gives them this reputation for being kind of, you know, wild and ferocious compared to sort of like, if you think of how we think of bears as rather lazy, despite the fact that bears also eat frantically to build up the weight that they need to survive the winter. In this entry, you get the Wolverine, and then of course you also get the Wolverine, Giant. Now, I don't know if the Wolverine, Giant is one of those, like, actual Ice Age prehistoric creatures, or whether it's just a, you know, a bigger, meaner fantasy version of the regular Wolverine. I mentioned the stereotype of Wolverine aggression because that's very much what the Monster Manual says. It says they're vicious, hateful creatures who kill for the sheer pleasure of ending another creature's life. Now, that's very cool, but it's not really true. Wolverines are tenacious and aggressive and will defend their food from much larger animals, including wolves and black bears, and even in some cases brown bears. Now, usually a fight between a wolverine and a wolf or a wolverine and a bear is going to end in a loss for the wolverine. But I guess the idea is that with aggressive behavior, they deter them and therefore don't have to fight them. But in reality, wolverines will leave their territories if they start to see wolf or bear presence in the area. So they're not really as ferocious as all that, but the reputation for stumpy ferocity is so important to the image that it's what you get in this Monster Manual entry. It's curious to think that this is an entry for the Wolverine that is maybe occurring before the first thing that comes into your mind when you think of Wolverine is Wolverine from the X-Men. Wolverine was already in the X-Men by this point, and he joins the team in Giant Size X-Men number 1, and that's in like 1975. And he had existed prior to that, too. I think he was in The Incredible Hulk. But he wasn't, you know, such a huge character. He was, you know, one member of the team. You know, this was really before he became a kind of breakout Marvel star in the early to mid-1980s. So we're still kind of in that last period when the first thing you think of when you think of a Wolverine isn't Hugh Jackman. 75% of the search results that I got when searching for information about Wolverines for this episode were about Wolverine, so next time I'll know to search for Wolverine Mustelid. Anyway, one thing that Wolverines do that's a lot of fun is that they will follow the tracks of another predator. So, like, if they stumble on the tracks of a lynx or a wolf, they will follow it because they think, you know, hey, that animal's going to kill something, and then I can scavenge up the kill. So in the same way, a Wolverine or Wolverine, Giant might do that with another dangerous animal in your wilderness setting. You know, so here are the players just, like, recuperating after their battle with an owlbear or whatever, but little do they know that the opportunistic Wolverine has followed the owlbear's tracks. So while they're sitting together, like, getting ready to, you know, slap a raised dead on one of their comrades or, you know, patching up their wounds and they've spent all their magic and whatever, that's when the Wolverine strikes when the owlbear's already done most of the work. That'd be a fun encounter, I mean, once or twice. But this is definitely like, if you want the grizzled old mountain man to tell the PCs, you know, oh, you city slickers better stay out of the deep woods, you don't really know what's in there. And they think, haha, you know, you superstitious old whatever. And they fight the owlbear and they're like, ah, yeah, see, you know, that old man, he thought that owlbear was dangerous, but, you know, we're made of sterner stuff than that. And then the Wolverine comes out and tries to eat your legs. I think that's a scene that actually has a lot of merit in terms of, giving that kind of The Revenant wilderness survival feel to your game. Alright, next up we got The Wraith, and I have to say that this entry makes me feel vindicated. It is totally possible, I'm not going back to check right now, that in the earlier part of this episode I said white instead of Wraith in the intro. And I know that during the white part of last episode I said that I wasn't really clear on the difference between a white and a Wraith. And the answer, according to the monster manual, is not much. The Wraith is basically a buffer white, right? It says it spends more, it's more present on the negative material plane. I guess what that means is that it's a little bit more kind of ghosty, spirity, whatever. But like the white, it can only be hit by silver or magic weapons. Like the white, it has a chilling touch and energy drain. It has better AC. It moves faster. And it has, moves the same speed, but it also has what I take to be a flying speed. It has more hit dice and it does a little bit more damage, although honestly the damage that this thing does with a punch is not really what you're concerned about. So they are very similar. To give you some level of comparison, like, remember when the whale entry covered creatures that go from 12 to 36 hit dice? So they're not that different. So I feel a little good about this fact. Like, I feel good about the idea that I said they were pretty similar without having looked at the Wraith entry, and in fact they turned out to be pretty similar. Wraiths are great. They're spooky. They're atmospheric. They've got a terrific illustration. They're just very cool. I mean, everything good that I said about whites, you can apply to wraiths. Plus, I think they have a better name. Because at least if you have my accent, people are never sure if you're saying white or if you're saying white. So, yeah, wraiths, I think, are just, you know, not only are they better mechanically, but I think that the associations that you have in your mind when I say the word wraith are better than the ones that you have when I say the word white. And I think maybe my idea that whites are a little more physical than wraiths, kind of more soldiery, may come from changes done in later editions to solve the problem that whites and wraiths are basically pretty much the same thing. And finally, we have the wyvern. The wyvern is what you get when you want to have a fight with a dragon, but your party's not yet buff enough, and you still want to indulge them. A wyvern is a dragon, but it doesn't have four legs, and it has a stinger in its tail. Now, heraldically, the distinction between a dragon and a wyvern is not found everywhere in Europe, I don't think. You just sometimes hear dragons described as having four legs or not having four legs. In Britain, the term for a dragon with only one set of legs is a wyvern, but even then, it's not 100% consistent whether it has hind legs but no forelegs, or forelegs but just a tail and no hind legs. So yeah, a wyvern just sort of like a lesser dragon. And here they're definitely lesser. They're not the kind of intelligent, superpowered beings that dragons are. They're merely a big, dangerous monster, such as a bad guy might ride around on. Whereas, I think if you ride around on a dragon, what that does is sort of diminish the dragon. They also have a poison stinger in their tail, which I don't think is something that's present in medieval or post-medieval images of wyverns. I mean, sometimes they have like a little barb on the end of the tail, so maybe that's what that's meant to be, you know, kind of like a, you know, like a little pointy bit, like such as might be the end of the devil's tail. One connection that I thought might explain the wyvern's poison sting, and I know I said wyvern last episode, but it is in fact wyvern. I looked it up. One thing that might explain the wyvern's poison sting is that wyverns sometimes symbolize disease. So, for example, the coat of arms of the Worshipful Company of Apothecaries, which is one of the livery companies of London, features Apollo conquering a wyvern, and that's because Apollo is the god who watches over medicine, right? Asclepius, the god of healing, is a son of Apollo, I think. And the wyvern symbolizes disease. So maybe the idea being that it symbolizes disease and ill health, so therefore it would have a poisonous attack? I guess that sort of makes sense. They're pretty tough, save or die, and you actually take d6 damage if you pass the saving throw, just as a kind of, you know, just so that you don't ever get away clean. I think whether you're going to use wyverns in your game or not basically depends on how you feel about lesser types of dragon, right? And whether you think wyverns are sufficiently different from dragons that you can include them as kind of small dragon-like encounters without, well, I say small, I mean, they're pretty tough, they're just not dragon tough, without diminishing the awesomeness of fighting a dragon. I mean, you're going to fight, let's say, up to two or three dragons in your campaign, because I assume you don't want to just rob them of their specialness. And wyverns can maybe deplete that, but I suppose it depends on how different they are. Anyway, but wyverns are nonetheless pretty cool, and I think the idea of having them be connected to disease and poison and sickness is quite cool. I think one can envision a noble or beautiful dragon, but not really a wyvern, right? At best, it's just an animal, and at worst, it's stupid and cruel and malevolent. And I think if you view them in that sense, they can become quite appealing, and you can really see how they would be used in games. Okay, so that is it for the W section of the Monster Manual. And in fact, this is the last chapter that has more than one monster in it. From where we now stand, there are only 3 monsters left in the entire Monster Manual. So next episode, we're going to do the Zorn. Episode after that, we're going to do the Yeti. And the episode after that, we're going to do the Zombie. So please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening.
Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.